Rachel, as far as organisations like schools and universities and colleges go, do you think that the generation above us, so health professionals, teachers, parents, do you think that there is a level of empathy there? And do you think that the support is dealt with correctly?
As far as I'm concerned, in my experience, a support network that works is not in place. It's partly to do with the fact that there's a complete misunderstanding and misconception about generational change, the issues that young people are facing now that are putting the pressures on, that are causing this kind of mental health epidemic that's going on in the UK at the moment.
Yeah.
The pressures facing young people are not the same as they were. There's a major distance between when you become an adult in the eyes of the education system and when you become an adult in terms of your mental health care. I've literally kind of grown up in the mental health eating disorders cycle.
Yeah.
And you find you're being asked, at school, you're being asked to make decisions which determine your entire future now when you are 13, 14, year nine is when you have to start picking your GCSEs and stuff. And if you don't do certain GCSEs, you can't do certain A-levels and you can't do certain subjects. And basically, you are dictating your life. But at the same time, in the mental health services, you stay a child and treated as a child until the day you turn 18. I'd already chosen my future and all that stuff. Like, I'm expected to do all this adult stuff on the one side. Then on the other side, I'm not allowed to have meetings on my own. I'm not allowed to make decisions without the influence of my parents concerning my mental health. Like, I can say as much as I like that I don't think my medication is helping me, but at the end of the day, it's not my decision. I have to sit in a meeting where both my parents are there and the doctor is there and I am there, and I feel like they're talking about me as if I'm not in the room. And then the day I turn 18, you get kicked out of those services and you have to start from scratch. Like, I'm 20 now. I can have been in the system for 8 years, and then just because overnight my age changed, I'm basically stuck out on a limb and I have to start again, and I have no support and no understanding. And I just can't get my head around the idea that the mental health system can think that that works. And one of the massive issues I've had is that my doctors at home, where I live with my parents, will not communicate with the doctors in Birmingham, and that neither of those doctors will communicate with the university services.
Mm.
So what I've had continuously is I've come to Birmingham and I've registered with a doctor in Birmingham, and then I've gone back home for Christmas and been told that I've been discharged back home and they can't help me and they can't even give me my medication, but I'm at home for a month. I had to move doctor's surgeries and they didn't pass my notes over. So again, it's kind of, so what can I help you with today? What's your life story? And I'm like, okay, yeah. You want me to tell you 11 years worth of information in a 15-minute doctor's session? They need to seriously think about having a separate portion of the mental health system,
yeah,
a separate focus that is specifically for people aged between 16 and 25, because there is no way that people in that age group and the problems they're focusing and the like, just in terms of practicality, the geography and everything, it makes no sense.
You've blogged intermittently about your own diagnosis, illness, and specifically recently you posted about your medication and I suppose speculation about the effects of medication when you've been on it for so long. Is there any chance you could sort of sum up what that blog post was about?
A couple of years after I was diagnosed with anorexia, I got a couple more diagnoses. I've since been, in the couple of years that followed, I was diagnosed with OCD, depression and anxiety. And as part of the treatment for my depression and the OCD, which at the time was can't walk across a pavement type bad, they put me on, it's an antidepressant called fluoxetine. It was originally the minimum dosage. I now take three times that. The thing with the fluoxetine is that it's strange because I've been on it for such an awfully long time. I don't know really how it affects me. I can't say that it makes everything perfect. If anything, I'm not sure if it helps at all. The only thing I have to go on is that when I was about 17, they decided I was, as in the doctors, decided I was doing better and decided to try and decrease it. And when they did that, things went kind of catastrophically downhill, which would suggest that it does have some benefit. But it's really difficult to know what's me and what's being helped by the medication. And I don't know, sometimes I wonder if I'm like immune to it by now. I was tried on one other, which was mirtazapine, I think. They tried me on it for 3 or 4 days, but it literally made me feel like I was drunk and having an existential crisis, and I just couldn't handle it. So they were like, yeah, okay, let's not do that. And I appreciate that it works, or rather, it's not causing any detrimental effects, but whether it actually is helping or whether there's another medication that would help me more is something that's really difficult to try and understand.
I mean, what are the basic day-to-day effects of just having medication that you always take?
One of the really ironic things I find about antidepressants is that, especially fluoxetine, is it comes with a little warning on the packet that says might cause depression or suicidal thoughts. I don't know, that just amuses me somehow. It just seems ironic, but it can be like it's not helping or making a difference at all. Like my mood still fluctuates horrendously, and whether I have a really, really dark day or whether I have a really awful day food wise or whatever, there's no correlation really to whether I've taken my medication or not.
Just a chat about Hannah, who I've interviewed earlier in the show. She's used business to help and inspire others. Would that help you, do you think? Like, would you be inspired? Would you buy into her product?
I literally have nearly bought one of those spoons, and I had no idea that the connection was there.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's a really cute little encouraging tool. Like, as in, yeah, okay, what you're holding in your hand is a piece of metal with something printed on it, but the thought behind it and the thought that there's a person behind it who had that thought and put that much effort into making something just to help you with a similar issue is like a metaphorical hug. I don't know, it means something, and I think that's something that she's been so clever to tap into, and I really admire her. There's merit to the idea that you can change your drive into something positive, because one of the things my dad always used to say to me was, you have to be such a determined person to have a restrictive eating disorder. It takes such a lot of restraint, such a lot of thought, such a lot of planning, such a lot of retaining information. It's a hell of a feat, really. If you take that determination, or you take that passion, you take that drive, and you put it into something else, imagine what you could do. That's still something I'm trying to do. I'm trying to find that way out. And I think for me, I do a lot of performing arts and stuff. The drive a lot of the time is to stay well enough to continue performing. That kind of idea of taking that energy away from something so self-destructive and turning it into something that helps you and helps others is a brilliant idea. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Rachel, for coming on Leeds Student Radio and
talking
to us.